Welcome back to this second hour of Leading Edge Medicine. Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
Oh, yes, and welcome back to Leading Edge Medicine. I'm Lynette, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. We're taking your calls at 1-800-465-8770. This is hour number two. Okay, Dr. Mixon, the cold plunge.
So, Jerry, what have you found out? Does the thought of a cold plunge rejuvenate you, or does it make you want to shiver?
It makes me shudder. Yeah, Nathaniel sent me probably 10 or 12 medical journal articles on cold plunges. And indeed, it does appear to stimulate endorphins, which makes you feel good and happy and optimistic. It tends to provide a boost to your immune response so that your immune response is more active. And my personal opinion is it's saying, I've got to try to kill whatever this is that's making me shiver. But anyway, yes, you do get a more active immune response from it. So there are some both subjective and objective benefits to the cold plunge. I'm never going to do it.
I was just thinking that the only time, you know, as I watch football on Sundays and I'm watching those men, you know, young men on the field for an hour, and I go, yeah, at the end of that hour, it's probably a great idea to sit in an ice bath.
Yeah, they get an ice bath, but that's to decrease the inflammation.
That's
so
right.
So they can go home and, you know, say at least hello to the wife.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, it decreases inflammation. It decreases pain perception.
Right.
So people that are working hard physically and overusing their muscles, it really gives them relief. And it helps stop that soreness a day or two later. So it is protective from overuse injuries. And like I said, the endorphin hit actually makes you feel good, I am told.
You're not going to find out for yourself.
I am not finding out for myself. I hate being cold. We are actually going to make a video of Dr. Armstrong.
Doing a cold plunge?
Yes. We're hoping to get it set up so that on New Year's Day, he will be one of those running down and leaping into Lake Washington or Puget Sound on New Year's Day morning as part of his little video on cold plunging.
So. We should have the other male providers do the same with him.
Yes.
I know Dr. Pendland was doing some research on it too.
Well, if Dr. Pendland wants to do it, and Dr. Mixon will be there helping to run the
supervise.
Camera.
In a supervisory capacity.
That's
yes.
Right.
And then I'll be taking pictures.
Well, actually, yeah. When Nathaniel sent me all this information, I said, fine, you do it. Does that help?
And I, you know, there are some techniques of doing it, right, Jerry?
Yeah.
Hot, cold, 30-second, 10-second. I don't know what they are.
And there are people that actually do bathtubs where they dump,
they
you know, big
ice.
Blocks of ice into the tub with the people. Some people do basically ice massage. Some people jump into, you know, icy water. There's the classic Scandinavian going, you know, from the sauna and then running out and leaping into the snowbank.
Yeah.
sign of insanity as far as I'm concerned.
Well, but in the shower, I think the most realistic for us here is, you know, you're in the shower. Should you turn it cold?
Yeah, you turn off the hot water and let the cold water sluice over your body.
And then for how many seconds? And then how you know, do you go back to cold or do you go back to warm? And then how often do you do it? And then when do you come out?
You want to see Dr. Mixon leap about 3 feet in the air?
Yes.
I'm in my nice, hot, warm, luxurious shower. I do love a hot shower. And then suddenly cold water comes flying over my body. I'm getting the hell out of the shower right now.
No matter how many seconds. Okay. We won't find out.
As fast as I can move.
Yes.
Woohoo. All right.
Okay. Anyway. My friend in Texas, does that come at least partway to answering your question?
Yes, I know. I'm sorry about the weather you're having up here. I got to say, right now, it's absolutely beautiful in Houston, so wish you were here.
I would love
to. Don't tempt him. He will be there in a heartbeat.
Yes.
I was visiting with a friend down in Arlington, Texas. He's just down a suburb of Dallas. And, yeah, we chatted for half an hour or so last night, and he was rubbing it in that we were up here with bomb cyclones with no electricity, cold, dark houses. And he was taking long walks with his wife through the park.
Oh, boy.
Anyway.
But on the other side, you know, our May, June, July, August, September are just glorious.
That's right. When it's 105 degrees in Houston with 98% humidity.
Right. You come visit us.
That's right. Come on up to Kirkland and we'll show you some nice weather in the summertime, okay?
Thank you so much for the call.
All right, take care, sir.
Thank you, Carl. Yeah. All right.
And, you know, even if it weren't for the suffocating heat and moisture, because it's like being waterboarded if you walk out in South Texas in the summertime. Mm. It's those skeeters big enough to put a saddle on and ride. I mean,
that's true. They do have big bugs, big snakes.
Oh,
big bugs.
My gosh.
Scorpions.
Yes.
Yeah, we don't have that poisonous thing here.
I've been here since 1988, and I have never had a mosquito bite in Kirkland.
Mm, okay.
Not one.
That's because your blood's so healthy, Dr.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay with me.
Yeah.
Whatever excuse.
It's not sweet enough for the bugs.
That's right.
Probably it. They go after the sweet ones. My daughter gets me.
Oh,
but I don't. You know, they don't like me.
Oh, boy.
Just as well.
There you go.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah, because if they bite, I kill them.
Yes, smack. All right. Taking your calls today, Leading Edge Medicine, 1-800-465-8770. Join the conversation. We are now headed to the very tip top of our state, Blaine, and we have Christine on the line. Hi, Christine.
Hello, Christine.
Good morning. Question. This is a two-part question. I had surgery for a grade one ductal carcinoma in August of this year. It was ER positive at 90%. PR was negative, and HER2 positive 3+.
Okay.
I'm not having any treatment because after the surgery, the spaces were clear. The margins, I guess, is the term. And also my PET scan was negative. I've had a past history of oral cancer, also negative on the PET scan, as well as uterine cancer negative on the PET scan. That was done in October of this year. They've recommended I have a follow-up in January. But the second part to this is I have osteoporosis or osteoarthritis of my knees, and I'd like to consider stem cell. How safe is it after being a cancer survivor that I wait to have this stem cell? So I guess it's kind of a two-part thing. They've also recommended this hormonal therapy thing for the breast cancer, which I'm not sure I'm going to do because I have osteopenia as well.
Yeah, and the hormone.
And I'm 82. I'll be 83 years old.
Okay.
Yeah, she means hormone deprivation.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking too. The hormone deprivation is going to make the osteopenia a lot worse.
Yes.
So you know, you're much bigger risk at your age of falling and breaking something and end up in a nursing home than you are dying of this cancer. The interductal carcinomas is our, especially if you don't have extension, the risk of dying from those is extremely low. So
good. And my nodes were clear as well. They took sentinel node.
Okay. Yeah. If you were my big sister, I'd say no.
Okay, good. That's what I decided. No treatment.
Good. Now, on the stem cell, you have essentially no risk. There are two ways to get the stem cells here. One is from your bone marrow. The other is from your body fat. And both of them work.
Yeah, and she didn't have any chemotherapy.
Right.
So
you know,
I did have two chemotherapies. My second chemotherapy, I passed out, and then I got sepsis from the port. And so that was removed.
Okay, so that changes.
Yes. And so and I'm not going to do anything again.
Right. Okay, so then the question is, what kind of shape is your bone marrow in versus your body fat? Do you have a bit of a belly?
Yes, I do.
Okay. In this case, that's good. All right. The only place in the human body that we actually increase stem cells with age.
Is fat.
Yes.
Go figure. Yeah. And we've been saying fat is bad.
Yeah. Well, it is generally. You know, body fat increases inflammation and raises your risk of getting
cancer
and raises your risk of dying of cancer. So, you know, we want your body fat as low as practical. But it is the only place in the human body that stem cells actually increase instead of decreasing. So, so they can get the stem cells out of your abdominal fat or out of your bone marrow. In your case, I would guess the more reliable would be the body fat. But, you know, you talk to Dr. Nelson about that. He's the expert. That's what he does for a living.
Something I need to wait for?
No.
Or after I had the chemo, the last one was in September.
That's the only thing.
September 17th.
Yeah. Yeah, and that would probably knock down your bone marrow more than your body fat. Mm. The chemotherapies are most effective against cells that are growing fast. And that's why they kill cancer cells more than they kill the rest of us. Okay, the cancer cells are growing quickly, and so we do the chemotherapy, and as cells try to grow and turn over, it kills them. Bone marrow turns over quickly. Mm. And so bone marrow gets hit pretty hard by chemotherapy.
Yeah.
Fat grows more slowly, doesn't have as fast a turnover, so would probably be relatively protected.
Yeah.
Still, depending on how miserable you are with your knees, you know, waiting another 3 months or 4 months to get things back into full swing before you pull out the stem cells would probably not be a bad idea. On the other hand, I hate to tell you, wait if you're miserable.
Well, the other thing to consider is platelet-rich plasma. So if your CBC shows that your platelet counts are fine, you can maybe do a PRP therapy for the knee while you're waiting for the stem cell therapy.
That would be true. Yeah. Good thought.
Okay. And Dr. Dan Nelson, does he take it out of the belly fat as well?
Yeah, he does both. Yep.
Okay. And he does PRP too.
Yeah, and he does PRP.
Okay.
And interestingly, the PRP is covered under Medicare. The stem cells are not.
Hmm. Okay.
So if he did your PRP first, you might get that covered under Medicare, depending on the diagnosis code that he can put in. Whereas the stem cells are considered by Medicare to be experimental, even though they've been done for 20 years. but the government's a little slow to come across with things. So stem cells are out of pocket. PRP is usually covered. So you might consider
that. All right, good to know. All right, very nice. Thank you.
You're welcome, ma'am. Take care.
Good luck to you.
You have a good day.
Glad you're doing well. Yeah.
Yep.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yeah, it's devastating, you know, anything like that happens at any age.
Yes,
yeah, so wishing you all the best.
Absolutely. Time to take another break.
Okay.
Yes, this show is just flying through, and then we'll be back to talk with Peggy. Her friend is losing hair, and she wants to find out what we can do about that. We know somebody, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. We'll take a quick break. This is Leading Edge Medicine. Time to get into that phone queue. Don't wait until the very end of our show. Call right now, 1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770. 8770. We'll be right back with more Leading Edge Medicine.
Living on love, buying on time. Without somebody, nothing ain't worth a dime. Just like an old fashioned storybook rhyme. Living on love. It sounds simple. That's
and welcome
what you're
back.
Thinking.
This is Leading Edge Medicine. We're glad you're here. The show, of course, brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinics. And we have three of them for you, one in Tacoma, one in Kirkland, and also in Linwood. And we invite you to come. If you haven't done that yet, you hear us talk about our health analysis, our free health analysis appointment. That's where you can come in, get a couple of easy tests, quick tests, they're not scary, a blood test and an in-body test, which will let the doctors know what is going on or what you could be at risk for. So it's very important that you come in and find that out. A lot of people don't know until it's too late. They're already diabetic. They're already having issues. So we want to find out what's going on in your body. We suggest that you get the large blood lab. And that's not a scary thing. It's about $2,000 worth of lab tests because we have our own labs. We can do it for $595. That's huge. And it gives the doctor so much information. You'll get about 70 pages. Or if you're me, you'll get 72 pages of doctor information about what's going on and what you could be at risk for.
Lynette especially.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Two extra pages for her.
Yeah. Two extra pages for me. And more supplements. But it's so worth it to find out what's happening, what you could be at risk for. Don't give up on yourself, your body. As you're aging, you want to be as healthy as you can be. And as Dr. Mixon likes to tell us, we want you to be
stronger, faster, leaner, smarter, sexier, and most of important, happier.
Absolutely.
After all, that's the whole purpose of the clinic.
Absolutely.
You know, we want you to have the best, most joy-filled, robust life you can for as long as you possibly can.
That's right. We don't want you to just say, oh, well, I'm old. That happened to my parents. Oh, no. If you can find out if you are at risk for health, things like sexual dysfunction or dementia, cancers, heart disease, diabetes, and more, we want to turn that around and get you as healthy as we can. But you got to start. You got to take that first step, which is to call and make your appointment. We call it a free health analysis appointment. The phone number to call is 1-866-86-YOUNG. That's 866-86-YOUNG. We'll get you scheduled, pick a day and a time that work best for you and fit you with the clinic that's closest to you as well. Now, you can also go to our website. You'll see lots of information there at lmclinic.com. That's lmclinic.com. And you can click on the button that says free health analysis appointment and do the same thing. Pick the day and the time that work best for you. We want to see you here. We want to see you healthy in the new year. So sign up for that health analysis appointment. I know a lot of you have been saying, I got to do that. I better do that. I've been thinking about doing that. Well, don't do that anymore. Don't think. Just do it. 866-86-YOUNG. That's the number to call. And you can actually do that right now and schedule your appointment.
You know, Lynette, thank you for saying it the way you did. It's very important because people sometimes don't understand what it really involves. You know, we think of preventative medicine and they go, okay, well, I'll do it tomorrow.
Yeah.
I still have one more day. I'll do it when I'm ready for it. Mm-hmm. But the $595 blood draw should just be a given. I think everybody should just come in saying, I'm going to go ahead and do the blood draw.
Yes.
But then more than that, and this is scientific, I'll give you just one simple statistic. Postmenopausal women, if they replace their estrogen, their reduced for heart disease, their risk for heart disease decreases substantially. And heart disease is the number one killer in women. So, you know, even without thinking about I'm reducing my risk for heart disease, you know that estrogen will reduce your risk for heart disease. And I think there are so many other snippets like this that people just don't know. Yeah. We earlier talked about the fact that testosterone improves your stem cells in the bone marrow. And there are little things that we do that just improve your ability to fight what age is doing to you.
But the one you missed. Actually,
well, I just gave one.
That's right.
There are many, many more. And I think what we should do, Jerry, yes, is maybe do one or two every show that we do, just so that it's just something that they take away.
Okay.
Just one little thing. Did you know that
put them
estrogen
on the schedule
improves
for us for the next 6 months?
Yeah. Well, there we go. I mean, if we rattle everything off, people go, yeah, I know that. I know that. But if you say, did you know that estrogen in a postmenopausal woman reduces her risk for heart disease?
By about 40%.
Most people don't know that.
Yeah.
That's big.
Yeah, a 40% reduction in cardiovascular risk is gigantic.
Yes.
But the other one that comes to mind for me these days is colon cancer.
Yes, it does that too. And most people don't know that.
No.
And we don't even know how it does that.
No. Estrogen lowers the risk of getting colon cancer in women by 40%.
Yeah.
It lowers the risk of dying of a heart attack by 40%. It decreases the risk of death from all causes by 23%.
Yeah.
I mean, that's mind-boggling.
That's right. And I think those numbers are worth repeating continuously because we don't pay attention enough. So I was thinking about it last night, and I was thinking, you know, maybe we should talk about one thing that estrogen does every time we're on the air.
Yeah, perhaps. But why just estrogen?
Well, because if women are listening and they are in the perimenopausal, menopausal, postmenopausal age group, they are not necessarily thinking of hormone replacement therapy because there's a fear and a stigma attached with that. Mm-hmm. My point of bringing this up is that learn more and educate yourself more about what your personal risk is because it may not be that high at all. The relative versus absolute risk for breast cancer with estrogen replacement therapy was very minimal. Mm-hmm. And so it was just the way the media presented the data that caused fear that we haven't forgotten decades later. But what we do not remember is that it improves brain, bone, heart, skin, colon cancer, and so many other aspects of life. We just kind of say, oh, okay, fine, whatever. But it's not that whatever. It actually improves your life.
Yeah. Well, and the reason I was kind of raising an eyebrow at this, yesterday we were interviewing a neurologist.
Yeah.
And this is a really first-rate, you know, world-class neurologist, published lots of papers, did his training at Johns Hopkins University, ran the traumatic brain injury clinics for the SEALs for years. This is a top flight guy. We decided we're going to bring him into the clinic. He's going to be one of our clinic doctors, and he's going to help us enhance our cognition program. Everybody over 40, their brain starts slowing down. And so instead of just focusing on people that have had their head rattled from explosions, which is work with the SEALs, he wants to help us develop and promote a program for people whose brains, they're not demented, they're normal, but they're slowing down just because they're old.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, brains start slowing down around 40. Mm-hmm. We call that age-related cognitive decline. So anyway, I want him to help us develop and promote a national program to keep people's brains perking at absolute peak efficiency in their 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s.
Right.
You know, which I think should be really kind of fun.
Yeah, no, my patient said this to me. In fact, yesterday she said, you know, her neighbors, her friends, people her age are all developing memory problems, and she's watching them. And her question to me was, what am I not doing that I need to be doing in addition to everything else that you are doing right now?
Yeah.
She said, don't let me go down there. I don't want to go there.
I don't want to go there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
77. I make my living with my brain. I want to keep it as good as I can, as long as I can. But one of his comments during the interviews really struck me. He said, he doesn't think we should be talking about prevention. He said, Americans don't do anything for prevention. They wait till they have a disease. You know, people don't want to talk about preventing their brain from going downhill. Once they've got memory problems, they want them fixed. Mm-hmm. But that's tougher.
Yeah.
You know, we should start as early as possible. He said, what you should be promoting in your program are the not prevention, but promotion of competence, promotion of the things you can do, you know, of being, give examples of being stronger, of being faster, of leading a life in your 60s, 70s, and 80s that non-patients are living in their 40s. Just show folks that you don't have to get slow and old. You can stay strong and vigorous and active and have a wonderful life into your 60s, 70s, and 80s and do as well in your 70s and 80s as normal people are doing in their 40s and 50s. Yeah. And I think that's... I think he's right. I think we need to look for ways to let the world know that you can be in your 70s, and as a patient of ours, you can be functioning as well in your 70s as non-patients do in their 40s and 50s.
Right, right. And yeah, brain health is overall health.
Well, it is. You know, that what's good for your brain is good for your heart, which is good for your kidneys, which is good for the rest of you.
Absolutely, so, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. Do we have another call waiting for
us? We do. Okay, why don't we at least get the question from our caller, and then we will take a quick break. We have Peggy on the line. Peggy is calling from Kirkland about her friend. Hi, Peggy.
Hello, Peggy.
Hi. How are you?
We are wonderful. I'm tall, brilliant, incredibly handsome, and she is equally brilliant, but just elegant as hell.
And what about Dr. UMass?
That was
Dr. Ewan. <All right. laughs> Just kidding.
Okay.
All right. How can we help,
Peggy?
Right.
Well, I listen to you often, but I am very active. I am also 76, and I have 70 students. I have 70 students, and I'm very busy. My husband walks me like a dog every day.
Very good.
And I am calling because I have a friend who's probably 42 and she's losing her hair. I did get the medication she's taking, but I can't remember what it is, so maybe I'll call back. But what can she do to help her hair not fall out?
Are you suggesting that the medication she's taking is causing the hair loss, or she's using something to prevent the hair loss?
I think it is causing her hair to fall out because she found out she had something, you know, some disease, and they give her medication. And since then, it's been about a year, her hair's starting to fall out. And she's only 42, so she's one of the mothers of my students, so...
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, the question, of course, is whether it's genetic.
Well, she thinks the drug is causing it. So then the question is, what is the drug and why is she using it? And can they change the medication?
Yes. But there's interaction.
So maybe the
drugs don't do it to everybody unless it's a chemotherapeutic agent.
Some drugs have those known side effects. Weight gain is a known side effect.
But it'll be a percentage.
Yeah.
And that's why I brought up genetics first. You know.
Well, what would you suggest if she wasn't taking a drug?
Well, then you have to investigate why.
Why?
If thyroid is too high or too low, either way, thyroid dysfunction can cause hair loss.
It is a thyroid thing.
Okay. So, you know, if her thyroid is high or low, that can cause hair loss. If her protein intake is inadequate, that can cause hair loss. Any sort of autoimmune disease can trigger hair loss. So, you know, you want to do the ANA, anti-nuclear antibodies, to see if there's an autoimmune component there, because that also impacts thyroid function frequently.
Nutritional deficiencies, anemia.
Yeah. So there's a whole host of things that we need to look at.
Should we go to break and come back and talk about other things?
We should.
Yeah. Wonderful. Yep. We'll take a quick break here and we will be back with more Leading Edge Medicine. Stay right there. And here's that number to get through on the line and into the phone call. It's 1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770. We'll be right back. Here with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. We have lots of callers waiting. We're talking with Peggy, though, about her friend's hair loss and what could be causing that.
Yeah. During the break, Dr. Umat came up with the question of whether or not she may be in early perimenopause.
Mm-hmm.
She's in her 40s now, and it could just be estrogen drop.
Absolutely.
How fast her estrogen is falling.
Yeah. I mean, average age for menopause is 51 in the United States. And so 10 years before or after is a valid range. In fact, some women start experiencing symptoms of perimenopause in their mid-30s as well.
Yes.
And that's all because of the declination of hormone.
Yeah, hormones are going down in their mid-30s, and it just accelerates as they age.
Right.
And it's by early 50s is when the progesterone is so low that they can't cycle anymore. The estrogen is not the reason your period stops, by the way. You've still got enough estrogen. It's the progesterone is too low. But yes, estrogen lack can cause hair loss. And if her estrogen is dropping out in her early 40s, that might be the cause. Iron deficiency is another reason. You know, she's still in her menstrual years, and so anemia and iron deficiency can trigger it.
And if she has maybe an abnormality of her cycles or a uterine fibroid or something like that, which is not uncommon, and she's bleeding a little bit more and irregularly, then that happens.
Yeah. And then you get the multifactorial, the woman whose estrogens are down but not enough by themselves. Slightly on the anemic side, but not enough to do it by itself.
Yes.
Thyroid's a little bit off, but not enough to do it by itself. But if you put them all back where they are, the hair starts to grow again.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not a simple question that you're asking us. You know, for better or for worse, what we really need to do is to bring her in, do our hormone panels, do some investigation, and then put her on the hair restoration program, perhaps, or adjust her hormones, et cetera, so that she doesn't need or will get a better response from the hormone, the hair restoration program.
Right.
So
if it's just the hair that you're interested in, then contact the Bella Medica team and they can help. But if you think there's more to it and there's medical need, then we're happy to help through the clinic.
Yes. If what she wants to do is to function as good as she can globally in every aspect of her life for as long as possible, she needs to be a clinic patient. If all she wants us to do is try and help her hair, then we can do that through Bella Medica. So,
is that helpful for you, Peggy?
Okay,
and we have Peggy is gone. Okay, so hopefully those tips will be very helpful. Before we take our next caller, and let me give you that phone number. We have about 24 minutes left of our show today. 1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770. We had an off-air question, which is always hard because then you have to kind of guess and you can't ask more questions. So we always love and prefer to talk with you if you can. But this question might be easy to answer. It is, what do you do if the blood bank won't take your blood due to the high hematocrit?
We can still get it taken, but then you have to pay to get rid of the excess blood.
Okay.
Okay, so the blood bank will take it as a donation. And again, this is due to one of those weird federal laws. This is the politicians getting in the way. Nothing wrong with your blood. But if your blood count is high enough that it presents a risk to you, then when you donate your blood, you're getting a benefit in exchange. And a donation cannot be beneficial to you. You have to be giving something up. Okay. So when you donate blood, the nonprofit organization, the blood bank, can take your blood because you've donated to them. But if you're getting a benefit in exchange, you're getting healthier. Oh, now the feds say, no, can't do that. That's not a true donation because you're getting a benefit.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
So that's one of those federal laws that make no sense at all to anybody except a politician.
Wow. All right. I hope that was helpful to our listener. All right. We're going to stay in the Kirkland area. Steve is on the line with his question. Welcome to Leading Edge Medicine, Steve.
Hello, Steve. Oh,
good morning. Okay. Can you hear me? Phone's been going in and out. Okay, good.
Yep,
two quick questions then, if we lose connectivity. Do men get a similar protective effect as an early caller was noted about estrogen with testosterone? And then I work nights myself, and so what's the proper way to take melatonin and to get the proper dosage? Should I take it before I go to sleep during the day or afterward?
Yes, you take it before your sleep cycle.
Yeah.
It's a soporific. It kind of damps you down and lets you relax and go to sleep more easily. And so you normally produce it in response to the bright sunshine in the daytime, and then you peak your levels before you go to bed.
Okay, very good.
As for how much, that's the question.
Yeah.
What we tell our patients is you start with 1 milligram, and you take 1 milligram 30 minutes to an hour before bed. And then if that's not enough after 3 or 4 days, go to 2 milligrams. If that's not enough after 3 or 4 days, go to 3 milligrams. And slowly walk it up till you find a dose that will let you go to sleep promptly, sleep restfully, wake up rested and refreshed, and that's the right dose.
Great. Great. Thank you. And then as far as testosterone, do men get a protective effect similar to women or the lack of it as they age?
Yeah, a lack of testosterone is the biggest problem with aging men. As our levels decline, depression, fatigue, anxiety, we don't tolerate stress and anxiety nearly as well with low testosterone. As our testosterone drops out, we lose our sense of direction. You know, young men know where they are in the world. Older men have to start using directions and follow Dr. Google. Because we start getting lost.
Sometimes it's not a bad thing.
Says the woman.
Yes.
But then she has a husband of a certain age. So as our testosterone drops, our muscle mass starts to decline. We get less steady on our feet. Our balance is not as good. Our coordination starts to go. We fatigue more easily. We are more tired in the evenings because strong muscles don't get tired. You know? As testosterone is dropping, our muscle mass is declining. Our bones start thinning out. We suffer fractures more easily. But it's the mental changes, the cognitive changes that hit us the hardest, I think. The drive, the ambition, the self-confidence, the stress tolerance that we had in our youth that we start missing as we get older.
Mm.
Yeah.
We have an awful lot of patients that were small business people. They started businesses. And then as their testosterone dropped along with their other hormones, they had to retire. They got to the end. I can't keep up anymore. It's time to quit and play golf. And then they came to the clinic. And when we restored all those neurotransmitters in their brain back to youthful levels, they went out, quit retiring, and started new businesses.
Yeah.
And are having a great life with whole new challenges.
Yeah.
So
I think the message here is if you do increase the melatonin dose to the appropriate dose for you and sleep better, maybe you're making enough growth hormone and enough downstream hormone. So have somebody check your levels for you.
Yep.
And if you're still low, then do consider replacing it. And for shift workers, I may even consider putting the cream on in the night when they are actually their awake time.
Yes,
because they're using melatonin in the morning, which is their sleep cycle.
Yeah.
So because this it's a tough thing for shift workers, and it's they are more prone to risk factors as well.
Once more, pregnant alone, they take bedtime.
Yeah,
we have dehydroepiandrosterone, DHEA, when they wake up and get ready for their work day.
Yeah, so we shift everything for you.
Yeah. So, you know, our clinic is designed to help people function much later in life as though they were much younger.
You know? Yeah.
And we can't make anybody younger. You've lived how many hours you lived. You know, we don't warp space and time. But, you know, I'm 77 years old. I've been on treatment for 28 years now. You know, I started the clinics when I was 50.
Mm.
I started the supplement company when I was in my 60s. I had my last baby at 65, my little Ivory. You know, and now we're starting a whole new media push with a national media development for a longevity network, actually, that we're going to be developing that I'm starting in my late 70s. And so, having the brain neurotransmitters of a man in his 20s has given me some real advantages in life.
Yeah, excellent. Well, very good. Well, thank you so much for the information. That's very, very helpful.
You're welcome, sir. Take
good
care.
Luck.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Very good. The show is Leading Edge Medicine, and we're taking your calls. Time for another couple. 1-800-465-8770. We have a caller in Bellevue. Lee is on the line. Hi, Lee. Welcome.
Hello, Lee.
Hi. I was the one posed a question about the high hemoglobin in the blood bank.
Oh, yes.
I actually had an incident when, because I take testosterone, then I have to go to the blood bank every 4 months or so.
Uh-huh.
Well, the last time I went, or one of the times I went, they wouldn't take it because the red blood cells were just too high.
Too high.
And they said it'll plug up the needle. And so...
Well, that's a good excuse anyway.
Yeah, and then now my concern is that in February I had treatment for my prostate cancer. It was radiation treatment. They won't take my blood for a year. And I'm concerned that after 1 year, they're not going to take my blood. And then what do I do? Because I don't want to have DVT or something like that.
Right. All right. Good question.
Yeah.
So you're continuing on your testosterone therapy despite your radiation therapy for your cancer?
I am, because my oncologist said, I don't see any reason for you to stop it. And
your
my
oncologist is right.
That it doesn't cause the cancer to grow.
You're right. Do me a favor, okay? This is the kind of oncologist that I want to encourage, because too darn many of them seemed as though they haven't read the recent literature. He's right. Testosterone doesn't cause prostate cancer. Testosterone does not make it worse.
Dr. Taylor at Evergreen.
Okay, Dr. Taylor. I will probably not remember that unless, Lynette, would you write that down?
I will write it down right now.
Hey, Dr. Taylor at Evergreen. Yeah, I want to contact him because I want to get some oncologists actually working with Longevity Medical Clinic, people we can refer to that, you know, that are up to date. Because quite frankly, some don't know what the hell they're talking about.
Do you know the first name by chance?
No, I don't, but he's the only oncologist with that name.
Yeah. Okay. Oncology at Evergreen. Okay. Thank you.
Wonderful, wonderful. Yeah. But the question is, what do we do for you? Two things. One, how high is your hematocrit?
I don't know right at the moment. I've got it here, but it'd take too long to take it out.
Okay. Usually the cutoff point for most of the blood banks is 52. If we can get you below 52, even 50 or 51, then they'll usually take it. Although right now with your prostate cancer, their fear is you may have some circulating cancer cells in your bloodstream. And so they don't want to take a chance on seeding someone else with your cancer. Right? So that makes perfectly good sense to me. So they're going to have to draw your blood and discard it, throw it away. But I don't know who's doing it now. I'll have to ask around. There are people that will take the blood. It's basically, it's called a therapeutic phlebotomy.
Yeah. You'll have to look around. Unfortunately, the places our patients used to go to did close down. So if anybody who's listening knows of some place, please give us a call. Yeah. We do try to help by finding out some resources. And what they used to do was just draw the blood and throw it away. But now they charge, as you mentioned earlier, Jerry, they do charge the patient as well. And then the other things that I have done in my practice, and again, it's not a prostate cancer patient, it's just a regular patient with a higher hematocrit, I do consider lowering the dose so that it allows them to give a little bit of a break. And I'll sometimes even reduce the frequency. So I'll tell them, hey, use it 5 days a week. Don't use it on the weekends. Go Monday to Friday. Lower the dose a little bit to see if I can bring the levels down. And usually that succeeds. I do tell them to drink a lot of water. And then if they're going to go to the blood bank, I say, you know, definitely a few days before you go to the blood bank, don't apply the cream at all. Yeah. Give your body a chance. So a few things that you can do to improve the odds in your favor.
But then the other question we need to know, are you using transdermal testosterone or are you taking injections or are you using pellets? How are you replacing your testosterone?
Transdermal, and I have thinned it out the way you suggested. So
good.
I can spread it around my body because it has been low. My testosterone is in the 300s. But what you're suggesting sounds great. I can do all that.
All right. Well, let's give that a try. And, you know, we don't come across this a lot. One time I considered setting up to do therapeutic phlebotomies for people.
We looked into it.
And the problem we've got with that is doing the therapeutic phlebotomy is not a big deal. It's getting rid of the blood. Nobody wants to take it. And we have to pay a fortune to get rid of it.
We looked into training our teams to do that, but unfortunately it was just what do we do with it once we have it.
You know, and again, this is one of those bizarre federal things. Blood is considered to be a biohazard compound, right? So if you cut your finger and you go to the doctor and he puts a stitch in it and he dabs that blood on your finger with gauze, he's now got bloody gauze. That is a biohazard. He has to pay a special biohazard company to come and pick that up and dispose of it. And yet every reproductive female in the country is bleeding and throwing her menstrual pads away. And it's not a biohazard. It's okay if it's menstrual blood, but not if it's a cut finger or a man who's got high blood count from testosterone. It's blood, people. And it makes absolutely no sense in the world to allow 50% of the American population to throw their bloody stuff away and the rest of us have to pay special biohazard fees to dispose of it with a special high-temperature incinerator because the blood is too dangerous to be allowed out in the world.
Wow. Hope we don't start getting charged for that, Dr. Mixon.
Well, this is one of the things that I, in an iconoclast, somebody that doesn't see the world in the regular way that the bureaucrats have seen it, gives me hope that Robert Kennedy Jr. might actually bring some sanity to America's health decisions and policies. He's a bit of a screwball, but damn it, he's a sane screwball.
Yeah, we'll take it.
And if it gets rid of some of the stuff that makes absolutely no sense, I'm all for it. Mm-hmm. So, anyway.
Well, thank you very much. I agree.
You're welcome, sir.
Thank you.
Take care.
Good luck to you. Good luck to you.
Thank you for that. And I believe that's Dr. Eric Taylor, at oncologist at Evergreen. So I've got that information for you, doctor.
Thank you, Lynette.
We don't have a phone caller, but we do have an off-air question. Nadia from Redmond. She said she tried the cold plunge, and she's wondering if there is something about age that determines the results, because she didn't notice. She did not notice a difference until she turned 60. Now she is noticing a difference. Have you heard of that?
No, but if I did it in my 40s and 50s and got no benefit, I'll be damned if I go
do
it again in the 60s.
Good point. Oh, boy.
This lady is far more health conscious than I am.
Yeah. Oh, boy. I guess if it's making a difference for you.
Well, let's ask Dr. Armstrong. Okay. Make a note of that. And, you know, when Nathaniel is making his videos, we ought to put that on a question for him.
Okay. Yeah,
you know, he's our expert. He and Dr. Pentland, because I know Pentland does it too.
Yep.
All right. Let's see if one of them have a paper about age differences with cold plunges. Do 20-year-old athletes respond differently than middle age versus elderly?
Yeah, I mean, I'd like
a great idea.
I mean, I'd be interested to know what she noticed as a difference at 60 that she didn't notice earlier.
Well, ma'am, give us a call and let's find out.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. And just a few more minutes left of our show today. We're going to no more callers for the show. We don't want to get started and then not be able to finish. Okay. Is there another topic that you doctors would like? We kind of started in with hair loss today. We're discussing that. Yeah. And we did get a question or two about that.
Well, you know, that is one of the neat things. We got great results with the hair loss with people that were an appropriate age. I mean, what happens when your hair, as you're aging, is those hair follicles that start out big, thick ropes get thinner and thinner and thinner and thinner. And really, they become very fine and almost translucent.
And thread-like instead of a rope.
Yeah. Oh. And then they get shorter and shorter and shorter. They don't grow as fast and long. And then at some point, the follicle stops putting out a visible hair at all. But the follicle is still alive. It's sitting down there in the scalp. It's just not making a hair as yet. We can wake that hair follicle up and make it start producing hair. Unless we wait so long that the follicles die. Mm. Once they're dead, we don't do resurrections. Mm. Okay? We do restoration, not resurrection. And so when you're dealing with people in their 70s and 80s, you don't get as good a result because most of those follicles are just flat out dead by then. On the other hand, the kid in his teens and 20s that is thinning hair, his follicles are just fine. They're just not making hair right now. We wake those up. So those young men that are thinning in their 20s, we can make gangbusters hair growth. The people in their 30s and 40s, we get good results. 50s, it starts getting a little less robust. And by 60s, now we're starting to get less good results. And by 70s and 80s, it's rare, though sometimes we do get a decent result. But it's more rare in your 70s and 80s than it was in your 30s and 40s and 50s. So it's just a matter, there's a continuum. Okay. We would like to help folks grow as much hair as they can, but that means when you first notice the thinning is the right time to come see us, because the younger you are, the more reliably we can give you that full, robust head of hair. I'm 77 years old. We are not going to get my thick, wavy locks back. All right. I just have to be settled for the fact that I'm very blonde now.
You have soft blonde hair. Yes. Right.
So, and we blondes do have more fun.
Yeah. I don't know about that, Dr. Umat. What do you think? Oh, look at the time. Okay. Great discussion today, doctors, and so many wonderful phone calls. Thank you for calling in. We are going to take a break next week. We will have a wonderful show planned for you. Lots of wonderful information, but we will all three be home with our families for that Thanksgiving weekend. But you can tune in and listen, make notes. If there's a question you have, call us the following week. So wanted to make sure that you knew that. All right. Well, have a great rest of your weekend. We will be back live in 2 weeks, but a great show planned for you next week. Thank you for listening, and thank you for being part of Leading Edge Medicine, brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinics. Not too late to make that appointment for the health analysis. And you were going, what was that phone number? I'm going to give it to you. It's 1-866-86-YOUNG. That's 866-86-YOUNG. Also, you can go to our website and find out all about us at lmclinic.com. Have a great rest of your weekend.